Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Caritis. Today is September 27th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. So today we are going to continue our reading of the whistleblower's complaint. Yesterday's podcast, we took the time to read in its entirety the memo from the Office of Inspector General for the Intelligence Community, where it was noted and determined by the Inspector General that it was a credible and urgent matter. And we went through those definitions. We went through some of those statutes that they were citing. We talked about, of course, this whistleblower appears to have a political bias. Nevertheless, given the preliminary review by the Office of Inspector General, they still made the determination that it was urgent and that it did appear credible. So we're going to continue with that. But first, I do want to talk about the markets, because there was a little bit of news that I think is going to carry over into next week for certain. We have the S&P losing 16 points for the day. The Dow lost 71. The NASDAQ gave back 91 points, a loss of 1%. The Russell 2000 Small Cap Index gave back 13 points, or a loss of 0.8%. The Dow Jones Transports lost 0.7%. And the New York Stock Exchange gave back 0.4%. Oil, WTI, and Brent unchanged from yesterday's podcast. Gold gave back a little bit. It is now trading at $1,496 an ounce, so it has broken through that $1,500 level. Silver remains below $18 an ounce and is trading at $17.60 an ounce. Still, I believe the precious metals are in a bull market. So any type of pullback, as far as I'm concerned, is a gift. So if you're somebody who believes that and wants further diversification, buy low, sell high. The U.S. 10-year Treasury relatively unchanged from yesterday's podcast, and it is now yielding 1.68%. And the VIX, the Volatility Index, gained 7% and is now trading at $17.22. Now, the news of the day, sort of towards the end of the day, some reports being floated out that the White House, that the United States, is considering to delist Chinese stocks from U.S. markets. Now, that's big news. And the timing of this, I'm sure, is on purpose as well, because October 1st is the Chinese anniversary, the 70th anniversary of the People's Republic of China. So their markets aren't going to be open. Now, recall, folks, that the tariffs were set to go into effect on October 1st, but in a gesture of goodwill, Donald Trump has said, okay, the Chinese gave us a gesture of goodwill, we'll return, we'll reciprocate. We're still going to keep the tariffs, but we're going to delay them. Since you're having your party, your celebration on October 1st, we'll delay them by 2 weeks. We'll put them out until October 15th. And that still remains the case as far as today is concerned. What's going to happen tomorrow is anybody's guess. We are also under the impression from reports that the higher level talks are scheduled for October 10th. Now, recall the Federal Reserve, their repo market, which they have extended, is going to expire on October 10th as well. Remember the repo market, the overnight lending? It was just a few corporations. They needed extra cash for tax purposes, and U.S. Treasuries were rolling over and coming due. So there was a need for liquidity. Nothing to see here, folks. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. It was supposed to be a one-off, maybe 2 days, maybe 3 days. Now it's going to continue for another 2 weeks. This is what these people tell you. I mean, you want to believe them, I got a bridge to sell you. I mean, you're beyond help. So we got to keep ourselves updated on all of this. We got to pay attention to all these things, because there's a lot of moving parts. The other thing that we have to keep our eyes on this weekend is a continuation of Hong Kong protests. I mean, they know China is celebrating their anniversary this weekend. These protests have been going on for, 3 months now, with no end in sight. I mean, this could truly escalate this weekend. This could be a big middle finger, big double finger to China with these Hong Kong protests, knowing that they are celebrating their anniversary this weekend. We also continue to have the Chinese stating explicitly and publicly that they believe that in some regard, the United States is behind or is involved with these Hong Kong protests. I can't deny that. I can't say that's not the case, because it probably is the case to some degree. We are overtly staging a coup in Venezuela, so why would it be impossible or improbable to think that the United States, in some shape or form, is continuing to fan the flames with these Hong Kong protests? So there's a lot of moving parts to continue with these trade negotiations, which I have been telling you guys here for months, that this is just not about soybeans. It's a lot more than that. Okay, it's also clearly about the intellectual property, but it's also about these Hong Kong protests. Now it's going to be about the U.S. potentially going to delist Chinese companies from the U.S. stock exchanges. That would be a huge move. I mean, huge move. That would be a big blow against China. What would they do in retaliation would be a serious question to ponder. But that would be a big blow. The other thing that the United States is doing is they have placed sanctions on Chinese firms who are taking Iranian oil, which is not going to be looked upon as something that is a gesture of goodwill as far as the Chinese are concerned, because they need that oil. They want that oil. So again, a lot of moving parts here. Don't just pay attention to soybeans. Pay attention to the Hong Kong protest. Pay attention to the sanctions with Iran. You have to pay attention to everything, because everything can be a pawn or a poker chip on this game. And with everything that's going on politically, which we've been talking about and are going to talk about further here today, China might just say, what are we going to make a deal with this guy? He might be impeached. He might be impeached. He might be rendered completely ineffective. We don't know what's going to happen. So why are we going to even waste time with him? Especially given the fact that, you know, he might be impeached. Maybe he won't be convicted by the Senate. But still, I mean, we're just going to sit this one out and wait till November of 2020, because odds are you're going to lose. That could be their calculus. I don't know, but that's a possibility. So again, a lot of moving parts. We got to pay attention to all of them. Another thing real quickly before we get to the whistleblower's complaint is, you've probably seen this in the news yesterday. I did not have the time yesterday to note this, but the GDP for the second quarter has been confirmed at 2% GDP for the second quarter of this year. Nowhere near where President Donald Trump wants to be, 3, 4, 5%. We're not going to get there, but nevertheless, 2%. One of the bigger things of concern, as far as I would say, is the downward revision that was made to business expenditures and business investment. That is something that we have to continue to monitor, because that's a huge pillar of economic growth. If businesses are not spending and investing into the economy, well, then, you know, jobs could be drying up, construction can slow down, a whole host of things will trickle down. We are, again, basically clinging to hope on the last pillar of this U.S. economy, and that is the U.S. consumer. And what we have seen also is an uptick in the savings rate. Well, typically, I would say that's a good thing that there's an uptick in the savings rate, but since we are near peak of this expansion, in my analysis, this would also coincide with a consumer who is now becoming a little bit hesitant to open up the spigot. So that's something to be mindful of. Something else to be mindful of is because we're already at the end of the third quarter, if you can believe it already, okay? And so over the next month and a half, we're going to see earnings reports. We are starting to see, at this point, a lot of negative guidance, okay? So they're already starting to play the low hurdle game. The low hurdle makes it easier to jump over. We'll see if that's the case or if this is really going to be a bad quarter. Because remember our discussion on the Cass Freight Index, they are predicting that by year's end, there is going to be negative GDP. So that could happen in the third quarter, or it could happen in the fourth quarter. Again, that's the Cass Freight Index. What caught my attention with these negative revisions, with these downward revisions, was that they appeared at the time being to be clustered around tech companies and consumer discretionary companies. So that's not good, folks. Why? Because the stock markets, particularly the S&P and the NASDAQ, have been lifted due to the tech sector. Well, if the tech sector is starting to put out negative forward guidance, that's not going to bode well for stocks. Secondarily, consumer discretionary companies are coming out and saying, we don't think things are going to be too great either in our Q3 earnings call. So there's your consumer. There's the last leg. There's the last pillar of this U.S. economy, which is not going to be good because of the ripple effects that this will go not only through the United States economy, but through the global economy as well. So you have consumer discretionary, which are, you know, basically little toys and gadgets that you don't necessarily need, but if you got some extra dime in your pocket, you go out and you spend it, okay. Consumer staple companies, on the other hand, that's toilet paper, that's toothbrushes, those are things that you need on a day-to-day basis. So the fact that you have the discretionary firms coming out and lowering their guidance does not bode well for the coming quarter, and probably not well for Q4 as well, because we continue to see deterioration around the globe, which we highlighted in a podcast earlier this week, because we had PMI numbers come out that were just, they were terrible. They were not in the right direction at all. But this is what we've been talking about for months. This is now just the vindication that is starting to come through in the data. And for all intents and purposes, Germany is in recession. So that's sort of the economic news for now. We'll continue with this. Obviously, we'll keep you posted if anything breaks over the weekend. This whistleblower report or complaint, as it is, I'm probably not going to get through the entirety of it today. So look for me to finish this up on perhaps Sunday in our week look ahead segment or on Monday, because there was not a lot of news that broke throughout today, just sort of a continuation of people digesting the Office of Inspector General's memo and the whistleblower's complaint. So with that, let me take the time to read a few of these pages to you here this evening. So this is on August 12th, 2019. Dear Chairman Burr and Chairman Schiff, these are the chairman of the Senate Intelligence and House Intelligence Committees, respectively. I am reporting an urgent concern in accordance with the procedures outlined in the following statute. This letter is unclassified when separated from the attachment. In the course of my official duties, I have received information from multiple U.S. government officials that the President of the United States is using the power of his office to solicit interference from a foreign country in the 2020 U.S. election. This interference includes, among other things, pressuring a foreign country to investigate one of the president's main domestic political rivals. The president's personal lawyer, Mr. Rudolph Giuliani, is a central figure in this effort. Attorney General Barr appears to be involved as well. Over the last 4 months, more than half a dozen U.S. officials have informed me of various facts related to this effort. The information provided herein was relayed to me in the course of official interagency business. It is routine for U.S. officials with responsibility for a particular regional or functional portfolio to share such information with one another in order to inform policymaking and analysis. So let me stop here, because this is interesting. Now, we are under the impression that this individual, this whistleblower, is a member of the intelligence community, either directly or indirectly through a contractor. Now, there have been some reports out there that are saying that this is a CIA analyst or operative, okay? This still, I don't believe that has been completely verified, but what we do understand from the Office of Inspector General's memo, which is what we're working here, is that this person is a member of the intelligence community. Now, here, with all of this interagency talk, this is going to be interesting. This has to be investigated as far as I'm concerned, because is this individual supposed to be privy to these types of phone calls and this type of intelligence in regards to Donald Trump and any type of phone call that he may be having with a foreign leader? If that's the case and this individual is allowed to have that information, then this is no problem. If this individual is not supposed to have this type of information, then whoever gave this individual this information about the president's phone calls in this matter, there's an issue, because that person has broken the law, because they have given personal, you know, private classified information to somebody who shouldn't have it. So that's something that's going to have to be investigated. Continuing, I was not a direct witness to most of the events described. Now, he says most of the events. He doesn't say all of the events or none of the events. He says most. So perhaps there were some events that he was. However, I found my colleagues' accounts of these events to be credible because, in almost all cases, multiple officials recounted fact patterns that were consistent with one another. In addition, a variety of information consistent with these private accounts has been reported publicly. I am deeply concerned that the actions described below constitute, quote, a serious or flagrant problem, abuse, or violation of law or executive order, end quote. That, quote, does not include differences of opinions concerning public policy matters, end quote, consistent with the definition of an urgent concern in the following statute. I am therefore fulfilling my duty to report this information through proper legal channels to the relevant authorities. I am also concerned that these actions pose risks to U.S. national security and undermine the U.S. government's efforts to deter and counter foreign interference in U.S. elections. To the best of my knowledge, the entirety of this statement is unclassified when separated from the classified enclosure. I have endeavored to apply the classification standards outlined in Executive Order 13526 and to separate out information that I know or have reason to believe is classified for national security purposes. If a classification marking is applied retroactively, I believe it is incumbent upon the classifying authority to explain why such a marking was applied and to which specific information it pertains. So before we get into the first point that the whistleblower is going to outline, let's just fall back here on a couple things, because he is mentioning Rudy Giuliani and he is mentioning Attorney General Barr, two individuals who happened to be named in the transcript that was released from the White House just the other day. So despite the fact that this whistleblower was not a member on this phone call or was not in the room with the president on this phone call or listening in another room to this phone call, his sources, the U.S. officials that he is citing here, not by name, but at least vaguely, are confirming that that was accurate, at least in regards to that phone call. Let's continue. The 25 July presidential phone call. Early in the morning of 25 July, the president spoke by telephone with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. I do not know which side initiated the call. This was the first publicly acknowledged call between the two leaders since a brief congratulatory call after Mr. Zelensky won the presidency on 21 April. Multiple White House officials with direct knowledge of the call informed me that, after an initial exchange of pleasantries, the president used the remainder of the call to advance his personal interests. Namely, he sought to pressure the Ukrainian leader to take actions to help the president's 2020 re-election bid. According to the White House officials who had direct knowledge of the call, the president pressured Mr. Zelensky to, inter alia, 1. Initiate or continue an investigation into the activities of former Vice President Joseph Biden and his son Hunter Biden. Number 2. Assist in purportedly uncovering that allegations of Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential election originated in Ukraine, with a specific request that the Ukrainian leader locate and turn over servers used by the Democratic National Committee and examined by the U.S. cybersecurity firm CrowdStrike, which initially reported that Russian hackers had penetrated the DNC's networks in 2016. And thirdly, meet or speak with two people the president named explicitly as his personal envoys on these matters, Mr. Giuliani and Attorney General Barr, to whom the president referred multiple times in tandem. Now, again, folks, that is true. Well, at least from what the White House has released to us. And again, that is not a verbatim transcript. But nevertheless, Mr. Giuliani and Mr. Barr were noted a few times, as was the U.S. cybersecurity firm CrowdStrike. So whoever was giving this information to the whistleblower was privy to that phone call, which is outlined here. So this is giving credibility to it. You can call it hearsay because technically it is hearsay because this whistleblower was not a member to this phone call. But the information that this whistleblower has received is showing to be credible. And this is from, again, that transcript or that memo that was released from the White House earlier this week. Continuing, the president also praised Ukraine's Prosecutor General, Mr. Yuri Lutsenko, and suggested that Mr. Zelensky might want to keep him in position. Note, starting in March 2019, Mr. Lutsenko made a series of public allegations many of which he later walked back, about the Biden family's activities in Ukraine, Ukrainian officials' purported involvement in the 2016 U.S. election, and the activities of the U.S. Embassy in Kiev. See Part 4 for additional context. We'll probably get to Part 4 over the weekend. Continuing, the White House officials who told me this information were deeply disturbed by what had transpired in the phone call. They told me that there was already a discussion ongoing with White House lawyers about how to treat the call because of the likelihood, in the officials' retelling, that they had witnessed the president abuse his office for personal gain. The Ukrainian side was the first to publicly acknowledge the phone call. On the evening of 25 July, a readout was posted on the website of the Ukrainian president that contained the following line. Translation from original Russian language readout. Quote, Donald Trump expressed his conviction that the new Ukrainian government will be able to quickly improve Ukraine's image and complete the investigation of corruption cases that have held back cooperation between Ukraine and the United States, end quote. Aside from the above-mentioned cases purportedly dealing with the Biden family in the 2016 U.S. election, I was told by White House officials that no other cases were discussed. Based on my understanding, there were approximately a dozen White House officials who listened to the call, a mixture of policy officials and duty officers in the White House Situation Room, as is customary. The officials I spoke with told me that participation in the call had not been restricted in advance because everyone expected it would be a routine call with a foreign leader. I do not know whether anyone was physically present with the president during the call. In addition to White House personnel, I was told that a State Department official, Mr. T. Ulrich Breckbuehl, also listened in on the call. So this whistleblower is naming some names here. This is a State Department official, Mr. T. Ulrich Breckbuehl. I was not the only non-White House official to receive a readout of the call. Based on my understanding, multiple State Department and intelligence community officials were also briefed on the contents of the call as outlined above. Part 2. Efforts to restrict access to records related to the call. In the days following the phone call, I learned from multiple U.S. officials that senior White House officials had intervened to, quote, lock down all records of the phone call, especially the official word-for-word transcript of the call that was produced, as is customary, by the White House Situation Room. This set of actions underscored to me that White House officials understood the gravity of what had transpired in the call. So now this is very interesting here, folks, because according to the whistleblower's complaint, let me reread some of this, especially the official word-for-word transcript of the call that was produced, as is customary, by the White House Situation Room. So remember, earlier this week we said, here's what a transcript is. Here's my definition, which is what the definition of a transcript is, verbatim, line by line. What did Mr. Trump say? What did Mr. Zelensky say? And you continue down. What did we get? We got a form that looked like that, but we got a note of caution that said this is not a verbatim transcript. So according to the whistleblower, there is a word-for-word transcript somewhere, as is customary. So, will that be proven to be true or not? Continuing, White House officials told me that they were directed by White House lawyers to remove the electronic transcript from the computer system in which such transcripts are typically stored for coordination, finalization, and distribution to cabinet-level officials. Instead, the transcript was loaded into a separate electronic system that is otherwise used to store and handle classified information of an especially sensitive nature. One White House official described this as an act, as an abuse of this electronic system, because the call did not contain anything remotely sensitive from a national security perspective. I do not know whether similar measures were taken to restrict access to other records of the call. such as contemporaneous handwritten notes taken by those who listened in. Now, this is interesting because this is actually something that the White House has addressed. And they said, yeah, this is true. We put this in an extra sensitive compartment. And their rationale is because, if you recall, folks, very early on within this administration, there were leaks all over the place. So the president and his team had to clamp down because there were leaked transcripts of conversations between the president and then Prime Minister of Australia, and I also think between Donald Trump and the then president of Mexico. And there might have been others, but I do recall the release with that phone call between the U.S. and Australia for certain. So they were saying, look, we can't have this. We cannot continue to have these leaks because this is an actual issue. Because, look, if we're going to have all these leaks, then it's going to be very difficult to have any type of conversation with a foreign leader because they're going to be concerned that it's going to be leaked out to the press and everything's going to be made public. So that's legitimate as far as I'm concerned. However, we're going to have to see if that was actually the case, because the president wants to come out and claim transparency because they gave us that quote-unquote transcript or memo, whatever you want to call it, but it was not verbatim, as was stated on that memo. However, we have the whistleblower saying that there should be a word-for-word transcript, as is customary. So that's going to cause a problem if there is a word-for-word transcript. So we're going to have to wait and see what happens there. Again, we have that ambassador, the special envoy to Ukraine, resigning, Ambassador Volker. So, you know, there's a lot of things are starting to transpire. So we got to pay attention to a lot of this. The other thing that I think is interesting is this whole CrowdStrike, the U.S. cybersecurity firm who, you know, oversaw some of the server with in regards to the DNC, and how Donald Trump mentioned that during the phone call with President Zelensky. I have a question. Did the president mention CrowdStrike to the former president of Ukraine? Because Donald Trump has been talking about this narrative for quite a while. And if he's been talking about it for quite a while, and if he has been interested in it for quite a while, which clearly he has been because he's been talking about it, then was he working with the former Ukrainian administration? I think if that's the case, I think that's going to be important evidence that would benefit the president, because he is doing his job as the president of the United States to look into matters of corruption with election interference. That's part of his job. It's most definitely a part of his administration's job. Whether or not you want to say the president has to be all hands on deck on it and have an understanding of every detail of it, that's another question. But it's something that the executive branch of our government should be looking into. That would support him. If he did not have any type of conversation with the former administration in Ukraine, then it starts to look a little bit hairier, because Joe Biden is a political rival. Now, we said the other day, look, this does not exempt or excuse Joe Biden from corruption. You don't just get to say, well, I'm a political opponent, therefore I can't be investigated. That's hogwash. That's ridiculous. If he committed a crime, go after him, investigate him. Same thing with Donald Trump. I don't care who you are. We do not need nor want a two-tier justice system in this country. So those are my questions. Did Donald Trump have a previous conversation with the prior Ukrainian administration on this matter? If he did, I think that is evidence in his favor that he is simply continuing to investigate corruption and election meddling within the U.S. elections. If he didn't, then the timing of it looks suspect, because Joe Biden is a political rival. Joe Biden is leading in multiple polls against Donald Trump, and it was brought up during that phone call with Mr. Zelensky. Now, as I had stated earlier in this week, and I still stick by it, as far as I'm concerned, asking a foreign leader for a favor does not rise to an impeachable offense. As far as I'm concerned, that's doing business. Now, you may not like it. I may not like it. I may not have said it that way. You may not have said it that way. But what do you imagine these people do behind closed doors when they're trying to wheel and deal? You do me a favor, I'll do you a favor. Does that necessarily rise to a crime or to an impeachable offense? I don't think it does. Now, the other thing that might be a little tricky for Donald Trump, especially if he was not in communication with the prior Ukrainian government on this matter, that he's going to have to answer for this. He's going to have to say, well, Mr. President, why are you just doing this now? You've been talking about CrowdStrike. You've been talking about the DN server for years. Why would you now wait to get involved with the Ukrainian government at the same time you're in the midst of the 2020 presidential election, and one of the alleged parties who may have been involved in said corruption is former VP Joe Biden and his son, Hunter Biden? That's a serious question, which is why I think that it is warranted to investigate. But I don't necessarily know, again, if this rises to an impeachable offense at this point. Continue to investigate, because I think that there are some questions that need to be answered on both sides. I mean, there are some things within this whistleblower's complaint that I'm going to go read the Office of Inspector General's report again, but I think there are some things that don't quite jive word for word. So I'm going to double check on some of those things. I still have some questions on that. I mean, there's a ton of questions that we're all going to have continuing on with this. But it's a circus front and center. We got, again, that State Department official, Mr. T. Ulrich Breckbuehl. We'll see what happens to him, because I have no idea, because he was not in the news as far as I know today. I have not seen him. We have Ambassador Volker, Kurt Volker, resigning this evening. So that's telling. We again have that European Union ambassador, U.S. ambassador to the European Union, Gordon Sondland. So those are a couple names there. Ambassador Volker, again, he resigned, and U.S. Ambassador to the European Union, Gordon Sondland. So where's that individual? So this whistleblower's name and names, and then stating a handful of White House officials, White House lawyers, U.S. officials. So we're going to have to see how this all plays out. We're going to have to find out if the Office of Inspector General, during their preliminary review, was privy to the names of these U.S. officials that the whistleblower is relying upon, because maybe perhaps that is how the Office of Inspector General came to the conclusion that this is an urgent concern and this does appear credible. Again, folks, you turn on the news, you turn on CNN, MSNBC, that's the left, that's the Democratic side of the ticket. They're siloed in. You turn on Fox News, that's the Republican side of the ticket, that's the defense of Donald Trump. I'm just trying to read what we have in the public domain. You can do the same thing, and I encourage you to do so, because there's a lot of information here, but I'm just trying to give you the truth as far as I see it. That's all I can do. I don't want to taint the picture. I don't want to say, well, he's innocent or guilty. Let's let the facts speak for themselves. Let's take a deep breath and let this process work its way through. So with that, enjoy your weekend. I hope to be back on Sunday, and we'll continue with this whistleblower complaint and anything that may have been breaking over the weekend as well. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capitol News. Please like, share, subscribe, and get the word out. And leave those comments. We do love hearing from you. This is the Capitol News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.